This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. Segment number four is what we're up to now here on day 20 in the trial of Alex Murdaugh. Let's go to the courtroom.
Jury is present, sir.
Thank you. Your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. Defense calls Barbara Ann Mixon.
Raise your right hand, left hand on the Bible. Do you affirm the testimony about to give the court in this trial shall be the truth, so help you God? Thank you. Take a seat in the witness stand. You can adjust the mic if you need to. State your name again for the record, please, ma'am.
Barbara Ann Mixon.
And spell your last name.
M-I-X-S-O-N.
You have a seat, please. Can we pull that mic close to you? Ms. Mixon, will you tell the jury a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how old are you, and what do you do?
My name is Barbara Mixon, and I'm from Farmville, South Carolina, and I'm a widow. I have four daughters, five grands, two great grands, and I do housekeeping and care for Miss Elizabeth Murdaugh, and I'm 71 years old.
71 years old. How long have you been doing housekeeping for Ms. Libby Murdaugh?
42 years.
42 years. And you did housekeeping for Mr. Randolph Murdaugh when he was alive, I take it?
Yes, sir.
And do you know all the Murdaugh children, Randy and Lynn and John Marvin and Ellett?
Know them just as good as I know my kids. They are my kids also.
And they're part of your family?
That's right.
Now, are you part of their family?
Yes, sir.
How well do you know Alex sitting here in the courtroom?
Just like I know one of my kids.
And you love him like one of yours?
I sure do.
Okay. Did you know Maggie?
I know her real well. She was like a daughter and a friend.
Did you talk to her frequently?
Every day.
And did you know Paul?
I sure did.
How often would you see Paul?
I would see Paul practically every week. He would come down to see him and Hanson, and then I would be there during the day. And some days he'll come by my house and see me.
Right. And you know Buster?
I sure do.
And he's sitting in the courtroom today?
Yes, sir.
Got a chance to see him?
Yes, sir.
Just not going to take a whole lot of time, Ms. Mixon, but we just give the jury a little bit of a understanding of how frequently Alec would go by and check on his mom and dad over, say, the last 10 years.
Practically every day when I'm there. I see them every day, and I'm there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. Sometime I have to work on Saturday and Sunday, and he would come by.
And what time of day, I guess, the hours that you worked over at, did you call the place Alameda, or do you call it Alameda?
Yes, sir.
And what are your normal hours there at Alameda?
8 to 3.
And it's always been 8 to 3 for?
8 to 3, always.
And you took some time off when your husband was sick, and then you went back to work. You remember when you went back to work?
My husband passed on January the 2nd of 2019, and I went back to work in August of 2019.
And during that period of time, you were working 8 to 3?
8 to 3.
Okay. And And I think you said Alec would come by frequently to check on his mom and dad?
Yes, sir.
Would Maggie come with him?
Well, not through the week. I mostly see Maggie like on Fridays, or she might stop by like that. But later it would come through the week by itself.
Okay. And I think you mentioned Paul would visit?
Yes, sir.
Just want to go to June 7th. You remember that awful day, Ms. Mixon?
Yes, sir.
Did you talk to Maggie that day?
I talked to her on June. I talked to her on June the 9th. I think it was between 7 and maybe 7:30.
June the 7th is when she was murdered?
That's right, June the 7th.
And you talked to her that evening?
Yes, sir.
And you remember what y'all talked about?
Yes, sir.
What did you talk about?
She said, Barbara, I was trying to reach you before I left to go to Somerville. I had to take my mama to the doctor, and I couldn't get a hold of you. But I am going to fix supper for the Murdochs and for your family for Wednesday tonight, because Thursday I got to go take my daddy to the doctor. And she said, oh, Barbara, I'm going to call you back. She said, no, hold on a minute. That either Ellie or Buster calling me. She said, I tell you what, I'll call you back when I unload the car. And I never got the call back.
The last time you talked to her?
Yes, sir.
And the last conversation you had with her, she's planning to make you dinner. Is that right?
Dinner for me and her in-laws. Okay. Yes, sir.
What was happening on June the 7th? Do you remember Mr. Randolph, what his situation was?
Well, John Marvin came to take Mr. Randolph to the doctor. And, you know, I remember that part because he was real sick.
And John Marvin took Mr. Randolph to the doctor, you remember that Mr. Randolph got checked into the hospital that day?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you remember calling Alec?
Yes, sir.
On the afternoon of June 7th.
Yes, sir.
And what did you talk about?
Objection, hearsay.
What did you talk about?
Objection's overruled.
What did you talk about, Ms. Mitchell?
I called Ellie. Well, first I called Chrissy. I always called Chrissy first. I couldn't get Chrissy. So then I said, well, let me call Ellie. So I called Ellie. I said, Ellie, your mom is very agitated. She is crying. I give her medicine, and I want you to come check on her later on during the day. And he said, okay, I will.
What was Ms. Libby agitated?
Because Mr. Randolph had done gone to the hospital.
But, and she was, in fact, agitated, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And what do you mean by agitated?
Well, she was crying a lot, and I couldn't get her to eat, and she just, you know, she just... just agitated, she wouldn't.
I'm going to show exhibit that's in evidence. Doug, if you could pull up the state's exhibit 520 and go to page 21, which is the Rudofsky extraction long version. Ms. Mixon, can you see? There's an entry on this timeline at 3:58:39. Alec Murdoch receives an incoming call from Barbara Mixon. Do you see that?
Yes, sir.
You think that's when you called Alec?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And that is on June the 7th, for the record. All right, you can take that down, Doug. How'd you learn about Maggie and Paul?
Well, I was sitting on my porch, and my daughter, she's in the courtroom, Shirley, Officer Stacy Lodeholt came and pulled up. Shirley, my daughter, was in the courtroom. She jumped out of the car and told me, say, Elliot found Maggie and Paul dead.
So a police officer came to your house?
Two of them. It was Stacy Lodeholt and then another one. And I said, could I go out there? And they said, no, you couldn't go out there.
Okay. And Ms. Mixon, That was a Monday night, and do you remember Mr. Randolph dying on a Thursday, passing on a Thursday?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that was June the 10th.
Yes, sir.
And do you remember that Mr. Randolph, well, the funeral for Maggie and Paul was that Saturday. Do you remember the funeral service at the graveyard for Maggie and Paul on that Saturday?
Yes, sir.
And then Mr. Randolph's funeral was on that Sunday. You remember that?
Yes, sir.
And the next day was a Monday. Did you work that day?
Yes, sir.
And what time did you come to work?
8 o'clock. Well, about five minutes to eight.
And who did you relieve?
Shelly Smith.
Okay, so Shelly would have worked the night shift, and you came on at five till eight?
Yes, sir, and released her.
And did you work that Tuesday?
Yes, sir.
And what time did you get to work?
5 minutes to eight.
And were you relieving Ms. Shelly Smith?
Yes, sir.
What about that Wednesday?
I relieved Shelly Smith by mistake.
All right. And Ms. Mixon, on any of those days, Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, when you relieved Ms. Shelly Smith, did you see a tarp opened up anywhere in Ms. Libby's house?
No, sir.
No blue tarp? You see no blue tarp on a rocking chair?
No, sir.
Have you ever seen a blue tarp laid out in the house?
I've never seen a blue tarp laid out in the house. Never.
And you relieved Ms. Shelly every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of that week?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you. That's all the questions I have here.
By the state.
Very briefly. Good afternoon, Ms. Mixon. Mm-hmm. How you doing?
I'm doing good. And you, sir?
Been better, been worse. We met a few weeks ago.
Yes, sir.
You remember down at the...
Yes, sir.
Not far from here.
Yes, sir.
You love Alex.
I love all of them.
You love
them. They like my children.
They like your family.
Yes, sir.
And we talked about that day before, briefly, you remember that day, the 7th, like he just asked you, we talked about what you did that day and who you talked to, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you didn't tell us about that conversation you had with Alex that day, did you?
No, sir.
Okay. When had they talked to you about that recently? When's the first time you told anybody about that?
I can't remember, but it's been a little while. I can't remember.
That's all. Thank you.
Anything further?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may step down.
Your Honor, may this witness be excused?
Yes.
Thank you.
Every witness two steps down is excused.
Thank you.
Next witness.
Your Honor, this defense calls Micah Sturgis.
Raise your right hand, left hand on the Bible. Do you affirm the testimony you're about to give the court shall be the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you. Take a seat in the witness stand. You can adjust the microphone in the seat if you need to. State your name again for the record, please, sir.
Sure.
Spell your last name.
Micah Sturgis, last name Sturgis.
Good afternoon, Mr. Sturgis.
Good afternoon.
To start with, can you just tell us about yourself? Where are you from?
Sure. My name is Micah Sturgis. I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina. I am the Director of Digital Forensics for Barefoot Professional Investigations.
You pull the mic a little closer.
Sorry. Better.
Yeah.
I'm the Director of Digital Forensics for Barefoot Investigations.
Okay. And tell us about your experience in law enforcement and then cell phone forensics.
Sure. So from 2004 until 2016, I was employed by the Cleveland County Sheriff's Office. It's a full-service sheriff's office located in Cleveland County, North Carolina, there on the border of North and South Carolina. During that time period from 2004 to 2006, I was a patrol deputy. In 2006, I was promoted to a corporal or training officer, where I trained new hires. In 2009, I was promoted to detective. In that capacity, I handled everything from larcenies to murders. And then I took on the role of the digital forensic examiner for the sheriff's office. Was the first one that we had, and I formed the digital forensics lab at the Cleveland County Sheriff's Office.
And before we get more into digital forensics, you've been involved in murder investigations before?
I have, yes.
Okay. As a lead detective?
As a lead detective, yes.
And then as you go into digital forensics, tell us about your experience with digital forensics in law enforcement and then afterwards, and then after that we'll get to your certifications and training.
Sure. As the digital forensic examiner for the sheriff's office, it was my responsibility to handle all the digital evidence that came into the lab. and was also I was also in charge of ordering things that needed to be ordered and stocked up on for digital forensic purposes. And during that time period, I was sponsored by the United States Secret Service to attend the National Computer Forensics Institute in Hoover, Alabama, where I was trained in mobile device examination, multiple tools, Cellebrite, Blackthorn, which is a form of Berla Ivy, XRY, which is another forensics tool. Paraben was another tool that we used. And so I received that training from the NCFI. They also sent me back with several things, one of which being a laptop computer or a MacBook in order to do examinations on, and also a Ramsey's box or a Faraday box that I used to use whenever we had phones that came in.
And let's just, since we're kind of on it, could you go through the training you've had in digital evidence?
Sure. So I have had the basic and intermediate cell phone forensic courses, introduction, intermediate, advanced computer forensics, internet investigations, introduction to wireless investigations. I was a Lantern certified examiner, attended the Lantern cell phone training. Lantern is a forensics tool for Apple devices, primarily Apple devices, does some Androids. Apple iOS forensics, I attended that at the American Academy of Applied Forensics in Charlotte. Cyber investigations, I was, like I said, I was nominated and sent to the National Computer Forensics Institute by the United States Secret Service, where I received my mobile device examiner certification. I also received Cellebrite certifications while there at the NCFI, and Paraben mobile forensic training, Cellebrite certified physical analyst, received XRY training at the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, and took the XRY intermediate courses. In 2017, I attended the Infuse conference in Las Vegas, Nevada, where I sat for my ENC written examination. Later came back to Charlotte and did the practical examination, where I was certified as an in-case certified examiner in 2017. And attended the Magnet User Summit a couple of times, received some training on their tool there at one in Las Vegas, the other in Nashville, and received introduction to alternate data acquisition training, wireless analysis training. I was received my Lantern certified examiner from Katana Forensics, my XRY certified examiner from MSAB, the Cellebrite Mobile Forensics Fundamental Certification, the Cellebrite Certified Operator Certification, Cellebrite Physical Analyst Certification, and then the Cellebrite Certified Mobile Examiner Certification, and also my in-case Certified Examiner Certification.
And can you tell us about how many extractions or acquisitions of digital evidence you've performed?
Sure. Well over 500 logical physical acquisitions and extractions using Lantern, the Apple device, forensic tool, Cellebrite, Blackthorn, XRY, Paraben, and well over 750 images of hard disk drives or solid state drives of computers, and analyzing that data within either FTK or NCASE. FTK is Forensics Toolkit. It's a forensic suite. Examined in NCASE, Magnet IEF, which is Internet Evidence Finder. That's what they started out as. They're now Magnet Axiom is the product that they produce and put out. So I've used Axiom to do multiple examinations with that. Imaged with hardware forensic imagers like the Forensic Falcon. I've used Paladin to get live acquisitions, Macquisition for Macs, and Recon ITR for MacBooks. Also had to collect checkpoint encrypted devices with my time at the bank.
And that leads into, when did you leave law enforcement and what have you done since you left?
Sure, in 2016, I received a phone call from an individual who owned a private firm in Charlotte, and I went to work for him as a digital forensic examiner in the South Park area of Charlotte.
Okay, and after?
After that, I worked for him from 2016 until roughly 2019, and then I went to Wells Fargo, where I was one of 24 examiners for the Wells Fargo and Company. After leaving Wells Fargo in 2021, I went and formed this lab at Barefoot Professional Investigations.
And have you ever been qualified as an expert by court to testify before?
Yes, I have in both criminal and defense work.
Okay. Criminal work, civil?
In civil as well, yes.
And in the criminal cases, have you been on the defense side, the prosecution side, both sides?
I've been on both.
Have you ever been qualified as an expert in digital forensics in a murder case before?
I have, yes, in 2015.
And was that for the prosecution?
It was for the prosecution.
Your Honor, at this time I would offer the witness as an expert in cell phone forensics.
No objection, Mr.
So qualified.
Mr. Sturgis, before we get into the what we're here to talk about, are you paid by the defense to be here?
I am.
And how much?
My rate is $300 an hour for any type of examination work or consultation, and then $600 an hour to be on the stand.
And does that go to the company that employs you?
It does.
In your experience, are you aware of anyone who does this work for free for the defense?
No, I'm not. In fact, I do IDS work.
What is that?
IDS work is indigent service, so people who can't afford defense experts, and I do that work, and the state pays me.
Turning to this case, have you what information have you reviewed regarding the cell phones in this case?
Everything that I've been able to look at and review has been provided by the state.
And specifically the extractions, where
right,
they're from?
Specifically the extractions of the mobile devices and reports that they've produced.
So you haven't done anything independent of what the state has provided?
No, only the state's data.
Okay. And have you had a chance to review the timeline that's been introduced into evidence in this case? I believe it was, I don't have the exhibit number on me, but the large timeline of events. That was
the one provided by the state, yes.
And as far as the cell phone information goes, is that timeline accurate?
It is there, with the exception of a couple of things based off interpretation of the data, but for the most part, yes, it is accurate.
Is anything missing?
There are two instances where there's some things from the Knowledge C database that aren't in the report that I've been able to locate and identify.
Okay, and we'll later on get to that, but we won't have to belabor it because we'll just sort of be filling in those gaps. But there are three phones here, you know, Paul, Alec, Maggie, Murdoch. What did you do with Paul's phone, if anything?
With Paul's phone, the extraction reports that I received, there wasn't much data after 8:49, somewhere in that time, on 6:07. So I didn't really focus much on that one. With Alex's phone, that one reviewed the steps that were there in the Apple Health sections. And with Maggie, I really focused my attention on Maggie's.
Okay. And so we'll focus on her phone. Was there any GPS data on her phone?
There was GPS data, but there was nothing from 6:07.
Remember when the GPS data started?
It was 6:09.
Okay. And you mentioned when talking about, I think, your qualifications, Faraday bags or boxes. What are those?
So a Faraday bag or a Faraday shield is something that completely takes the device off the network. It also prevents GPS signal from reaching the device and changing data to the device.
Can you describe your experience working with those in law enforcement?
Sure. So part of my responsibility as the when I worked at the sheriff's office as head of the digital forensics lab was to make purchases. So I would purchase these Faraday bags for our patrol officers. So when they came out on scene and came across, if we had an instance of a crime where a phone was used and they needed to seize that phone, they had access to those bags, either in their cars or back at the office in the shared vault room where they could go in and put their evidence up. And if it's a good bag, which, you know, if you buy the right bag and the phone's put in there the proper way, then it prevents signal from reaching the phone.
And then, did you mention a box?
Yes, so it was a Ramsey's box, is what I called it. The Secret Service provided that to me when I left their training. And with that box, what I would do is I'd take the phone from the Faraday, or from evidence that was in the Faraday bag wrapped up, put it inside the Faraday box, or the Ramsey's box. It has two gloves that I'd shove my hands into, my computer, and the forensic software would be plugged into the side of the Ramsey's box. It was a powered box. There was a light on the inside, so it had a window I could look into, and then I could manipulate the bag and open it up and pull the phone out and keep everything in that Faraday shield.
In your opinion, if Maggie Murdoch's phone had been secured in the way you just described, would it have GPS data from 6-7?
It likely would have.
Can we show what's been admitted as State's Exhibit 278? Can we show what's been admitted as State's Exhibit 278, please? And can we see the top of the screen? Sir, do you know what the little arrow in the top left of the phone screen is?
Yeah, that's the locations. I'm sorry. That's a location services arrow.
And I probably should have asked first, this was admitted as a photo of Maggie Murdoch's phone in the lab before the extraction. Have you seen this before? Do you recognize it?
Yes, I have.
And again, that arrow indicates?
Yes, that location mean? Services are active on the device, even though the phone's in airplane mode.
Does that mean that right there in the lab it's writing GPS data?
Yes.
You can take that down, please. Show you what's been marked as Defendant's Exhibit 156. I'll ask you if you recognize that.
I do. This is Alex Murdoch's steps and Maggie Murdoch's steps from the Apple Health data.
Your Honor, I would offer, I believe, without objection, Defendant's Exhibit 156 in evidence.
No objection.
Submitted.
Pull up. It's the Apple. I'm going to just ask you to explain what some of these terms are. How does, and obviously from the title, this is out in Murdoch's phone. How does the phone come up with that steps number?
So there are accelerometers.
Mic,
I'm sorry.
Closer, please.
I hope I sit up a little further. There's accelerometers inside the device. So whenever the phone is jostled or moved and there's the accelerometers move, then that accelerometer data logs a step. So independent upon where the device is, if it's on your waist or in your pocket, or you're holding it in your hand when you're walking, that movement of the accelerometer indicates those steps.
And what does, how does it come up with the distance that goes, that corresponds with those steps?
It uses the satellite's GPS.
And what does the start and stop times, what do they mean?
So in the Apple steps or Apple Health data here, you see, for instance, entry 26, that the between the times of 7:55:32 and 8:05:07, that 270 steps were taken during that time period.
Okay. Now, do we know when in that time period the steps occurred?
We know that the steps or the logging of those steps started at 7:55:32. But whether we don't know each individual step, when each individual step took place. We just know that sometime during that time frame, those 270 steps were taken.
And between the steps, numbers, and the distance, do you have an opinion on which one is maybe more accurate?
In my opinion, the steps are going to be more accurate.
Why is that?
Because of the accelerometer and the hardware in the phone, they're more accurate.
Does that mean that the distance is not useful information?
It doesn't mean that the distance isn't useful information. I think the totality of everything altogether is what we have to look at here.
Go to the second page. And is this the same thing for Maggie Murdaugh's phone?
It is.
Before we get into time, just some other things to cover. There's been a lot of talk so far about orientation changes. You can take that down, that exhibit. What is an orientation change on an iPhone?
So an iPhone has two orientations. It has a portrait or up and down, or a landscape, which is horizontal or sideways. And whenever the device is backlit, that's when the orientation change will log and show. Now, we're not specifically talking about like a phone. If you physically take the phone and you turn it like this, we're not talking about the physical.
I'm going to just interrupt a second. I know they don't let you have a phone, but since you're gesturing,
thank you.
There's a phone that might
be. So what we're talking about is not the physical positioning of the phone, but the orientation of the data that you're reading on the device, that orientation change.
And what do the start and end times mean for an orientation change?
So when a orientation change is made, a start time is logged. That's the start time of the orientation change that you're seeing on the device itself.
And for Maggie's phone, what was the last orientation change? When was that?
I believe that was 9:06 and 12 seconds p.m. on 6/7.
And when did that one end or complete?
I believe that was 9:06 and 20 seconds.
And at when it completed, what was the orientation of the phone for the rest of the time?
It was in portrait mode.
Okay. If the screen is off, can an orientation change occur?
If the screen is off, no, the orientation change can't occur.
If the orientation change happens in the database at the exact moment the screen comes on, does that tell you anything?
When I see a orientation change at the exact time that the screen is lit up, if the device was in horizontal or landscape mode and then moved into portrait mode and the screen comes on, then all of a sudden, the exact same time, it changes into portrait mode. To me, that indicates that the phone was in a portrait mode position, and then the screen comes on, and then the orientation change takes place inside the phone.
Does that mean that movement when the screen is off can appear as an orientation change when the screen comes on?
When the screen comes on, yes. When the screen's backlit, that's when the orientation change. It cannot make an orientation change unless the back screen's lit.
So kind of moving on then to, we've talked about orientation changes and they don't happen when the screen is off, as you said. Can motion of the phone turn on the screen?
Yes. Very little motion can turn on a screen.
And what is the raise to wake feature on that?
So the Apple has a raised awake feature that's set by default. Currently this phone, and unfortunately you can't see there.
Well, could you, if the court's permission, could you come down to show the jury?
It's on. See that small movement. Can I put it right here? No? Okay. The slight raising of the phone will indicate. So when the phone's here, if you raise the phone, it raises the weight. So if you raise the phone like that, if the phone's flipped over, you flip the phone back over, it wakes up. If you move the phone from, what's this move? To here, the phone comes on. So that's the raise the wake function.
And was this feature turned on Maggie Murdaugh's phone on June 7th?
by all indications on the database, there were that. It was there, yes.
Are you familiar with the location of Maggie Murdoch's phone when it was covered by law enforcement on 680?
I am.
And have you reviewed the recently received GPS data for Alex Murdoch's Suburban when it was passing that location?
I did.
Okay. So do you know when the Suburban passed the location of the phone?
When it was leaving the house where the crimes took place, it was around 9:08 when it was passing the location where that phone was located. And then on the return trip back, it was 9:59, I believe 19 seconds.
Was Maggie Murdoch's phone screen off during those times?
Yes.
Now, now you're just here as a cell phone expert, right?
That's correct.
So can you offer any expert opinion on how a phone would tumble or bounce or move when thrown from a car going 40 plus miles an hour, you know, into the brush and the side of a country road?
No, there's just too many variables, and I'm not an expert on physics, sir.
Can you tell us how much motion would be required for the screen to come on a phone?
Very little. Just, you know, just reaching and picking this phone up like I just did there, the phone comes on. So very little.
Okay. And again, in the times that Murdoch's car was passing, the screen never came on.
That's correct. The database indicated it was off.
Turn to Maggie Murdoch's phone.
Show you what's been marked as attendance 158. Do you recognize this?
I do.
And what is it?
This is a PowerPoint presentation printed off that you put together, but it's based off of the Knowledge Seed database
right.
data.
And to be clear, I typed it into PowerPoint. Have you reviewed every slide in that presentation?
I have.
Have you verified the data on every slide?
I have.
And you've confirmed independently the data on every slide?
Yes.
That's segment number four in our continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdoch. Still more to come. Press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of it. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.